I mean you, dear listener. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this Wario Desho podcast. We're so happy to have the pleasure of your company today. If you've listened to us before and like our show, you might be wondering how you can support us, since we won't take your money. This podcast will continue to be free, but if you'd like to show your appreciation, please consider leaving us a rating and review on iTunes, as those help our discoverability. If you don't use iTunes, that's fine too. You can follow us and like and share our content on SoundCloud, YouTube, and Twitter. Additionally, we love getting your feedback, positive or negative. Tweet us at WarioDesho or email us at WarioDesho@gmail.com. Whether or not it gets read on the show, I can assure you, we all read every tweet and email you send us. And once again, dear listener, we thank you so much. Now please, enjoy the show.
This is the Switchblade, your friendly neighborhood knife pervert.
悪いでしょう。
Gentlemen and NBs, welcome, friends and others. I am the Subtle Doctor, and with me is my stalwart podcast companion, master of both the wide-ruled and college-ruled spiral notebooks, it's Shadon.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're currently recording this on Halloween, so in the somewhat strange instance that you happen to be time-traveling but also listening to this at the same time, happy Halloween to you.
Yes, happy spooky Wednesday.
Spooky.
This podcast has nothing to do with Halloween or spookiness.
No, usually, unfortunately.
By the way, I should say the title of this podcast in case this is Wario Desho. I'm sure you know that because you clicked on this to. There's no way this wound up in your ears without you understanding what you're listening to. That's Japanese for it's bad, really bad, and that's what we are. We're a bad podcast about anime.
To be fair, Wario Desho was the comment I last left on Just Eat about the most recent kebab I ate as well. No one understood it. Except that one guy. The one guy out there, he got it. And he was like, well, I ain't touching that shit of a 10-foot barge pole.
You've helped, you've really, really helped one person while but befuddling many others.
Well.
And listen, that's reflective of our own podcast, where 9 out of 10 people sort of walk away scratching their heads, and 1 out of 10 form an ardent attachment to us, which is cool. I'm up for that.
I'm totally okay with that.
So what is this? This is sort of a special episode. We're just going to talk about a rather general topic that touches on many different anime, but also other media, other works of art. Because we were talking about it off-cast, we thought, hey, this seems like a really cool thing to kind of get in the weeds about and hash out. And so we're going to do that. Our discussion is... So the original genesis of it is we were talking about Kill la Kill, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I sent you Ollie's Philosophy Tubes, really cool video on Kill la Kill, called Is Anime Fanservice Bad Art? Let me just take this opportunity, and I think you'll, Shadon, feel the same. Philosophy Tube is a really, really excellent YouTube channel.
Uh-huh.
Everybody should subscribe. Everyone should follow Ollie on Twitter.
Smash that like button.
Smash it. He's actually offering a really nice service to everyone for free. You know, he got his philosophy education and decided to pursue an acting career.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is giving it away for free on the internet, sharing his philosophy acumen, his insight, his very sharp intellect, and mm-hmm. giving you very digestible versions of different philosophical questions or philosophers or big movements and what have you. So please check that out.
For sure.
Pluggity plug 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 plug. follow me on Twitter, Ollie.
You could just ask him.
Yeah, but...
I mean, Twitter's taking away the like button. You're going to have no choice eventually. Nice one, Jack. You incompetent wankstain.
Is Twitter really taking away the like button?
I believe so.
The heart?
Yes. Get it while it's good, folks. Hit that like button.
Oh my god.
Yeah, Jack's reasoning for doing that, by the way, just as a mild tangent, is that it's to improve the quality of debate, quote-unquote, which is sort of like... I mean, this is like saying that your house is on fire, or rather, you know, your kitchen's on fire. And so what do you decide to do to start your kitchen? Do you bulldoze the entire house, or do you just isolate the fire and put it out in the kitchen? In Jack's case, he prefers to demolish the entire house because he's a fucking nitwit. So there we are.
Boy.
Smash that like button. It's only got a couple of days left. Oh, a couple of weeks left in its lifespan.
I guess the reason behind it is that you won't feel like you have this sort of captive audience and they're all clapping for your opponent or something, and that will just make you feel shitty when you're in an online debate.
If they want to remove the like tool, they can forget that and remove some actual legitimate tools, as in people,
hey,
from Twitter.
Hey,
there's your thought.
There's a solution.
There's a
but
good,
that
there's
would
good
require
start.
That would require a lot of holistic sort of review and a deep and sustained effort.
Can it be done by an algorithm? No. Well, fuck no, that
yeah,
noise.
Exactly.
Anyway, so back to anime service fan. You know, is it anime fan service? Is it bad art?
Well, I just want to quickly say first. What we're going to be talking about, I think, applies to way more than just fan service. Fan service is where a lot of anime fans will encounter this, the more basic, less specific question. Do ethical defects mar a work of art? And that's the question that, after about a minute and a half, 2 minutes of Ollie's video, that's what he reveals that he's really asking, right? It's a more general question. So what is an ethical defect? He defines it, and we're going to stick with his definition here. An ethical defect is if a show has one, it's not just displaying certain imagery or attitudes. It is actively endorsing that imagery and those attitudes. So it will be like the difference between people being killed in a show versus a show actively or subversively, subtextually endorsing the idea that killing is this good thing that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into specific examples, I think, in a moment. But that's the question. And yeah, we both just kind of found it fascinating. So we're going to kind of we're going to take this two-year-old, nearly three-year-old philosophy tube video and use it as a jumping off point for some anime discussion.
Indeed. So, to start with, I think it's just important I speak about my particular experience, or rather, my shifting perspectives, which I mentioned once or twice before on the podcast. Currently, I don't care for fan service. With an asterisk, there are exceptions to that rule, as there always are. For me, it's always a case of application execution. Like, why is it here? What's it here for? Is it relevant to the point of your hand here? Does it actually detract from what's going on? I mean, the amount of times I spoke about Franks where it had fan service in it that seemed actively contradictory to what was going on, or just plain distracting, that sort of thing.
Will we never get away from Darling in the Franks?
Frankly not. But it's a relevant, it's a more relevant thing that our viewers might be aware of.
Uh-huh.
So here's the thing for me, though, right? Up until I watched all these videos, I kind of only ever really thought of it on a case-by-case basis, which is, you know, does this work detract from itself by having that kind of fan service in there? Is the fan service, you know, acceptable or not? I mean, there were, like, you know, I learned about the diegetic argument and the fact that, well, at the end of the day, it's, you know, always a work of human creation, so it doesn't matter.
Do you mind fully kind of unpacking what the diegetic argument is? This is an argument from Dan Olson, right?
Yes, it is. I actually have a perfect example for this. Let's talk about Quiet from Metal Gear Solid 5 for a second. So, in that game, Quiet wears basically nothing other than bin liners, as far as I'm concerned, and boots. No, really, it looks like bin liners, and a little bit of lederhosen, and whatever you want to call it, but I would say the skin level is 90% plus, easily. There's nothing left to the imagination. Now, here's the thing. The explanation in there, Metal Gear Solid 5, is that she photosynthesizes through her skin, draws in, you know, sunlight and oxygen, she breathes through it. So, obviously, the more surface area exposed, the easier it is, you know, for her to do that. That's the diegetic argument for why she is the way she is in the game. It's a justification for her dressing like that. However, the problem with the diegetic argument is that, everything that's written in a game or a work of fiction or a text is the product of a human person. Unless, you know, this is like 10 years in the future when Google's writing, you know, the next level of Shakespeare or some shit. So we'll see how well this particular point ages. But point being is that it didn't need to be the way it is to, you know, to have her be that way. If anything, it actually makes it more nakedly transparent. Wink, wink.
I see what you did.
It's very artificial. It's nature just to justify that being there as opposed to, well, she just is that because she is. So there you go. But nothing needs to be the way it is in fiction to accomplish what it needs to do. This ties into a lot of other thoughts I've had on a different property that's come out lately, which has been controversial, but we're not going to discuss that here because it's not actually relevant.
Yeah, you could basically use that kind of argument to justify almost anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the world was created this way, this very specific condition, therefore it's justified.
When
it doesn't take a lot, I think, to see this is an argument with a lot of issues.
Yeah, I mean, in Kill the Kills it case, the diegetic argument there is to why the god robes and the clothes work the way they do. Senketsu flat out says to Ryuko, I'm covering as little area as possible because otherwise I fear I might take over your consciousness if I covered all of it. Which obviously does not excuse the logical hiccup that in that case, why is Senketsu designed the way it is? Why not a sports bra and shorts?
You know. Spoilers for Kill the Kill.
Yeah, nothing is left to the imagination in that show either. Although there is more to it than just logical hiccups, of course. That's a very baseline examination of it. You could obviously argue, you know, the toss about, like, why the clothes look the way they do. So that's the diegetic argument there. But as it stands right now, I've kind of hit on a different understanding, thanks to Ollie's video, which has made me realise that it's not simply just a question of considering one work on its own, but its presence in the medium as a whole and how other works kind of coalesce and congeal with it in terms of similar ideas and arguments. So, without further ado, I suppose I should lead into it. I'm going to need to give you an example to you all, though, first, just to describe what I'm talking about here. If you were alive in the 90s and not one of those, you know, plebeian, you know, peasant millennials who smell really bad, you might have been aware that the original Doom, not 2016's Doom, but the original one, was embroiled in a bit of controversy in the Columbine Massacre because it was cited as an influence on the murderers in question, you know, the shooters that drove them to it. They were avid Doom mappers, as it turns out.
What year did Doom come out? 93?
93? I think 4 was Doom 2, if I remember.
Okay. And the Columbine tragedy happened in 1998.
Yeah. It was, I believe it was cited as that. Now, I'm merely dredging this from memory, so please...
Well, no, I guess it couldn't have been 1998, because I remember them also sort of throwing the Matrix under the bus. All kinds of media really got attacked by Republican congressmen, among others. But Doom, the Matrix, a lot of things... during that time. New metal.
Yeah, it was actually in 1999, as it says.
Okay, 99. Hence, I guess, the relevant, where Matrix was relevant.
Yeah, Doom was especially mentioned in that. I just double-checked on Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, reason why I'm bringing up Columbine and Doom here is that Doom was cited as an influence, but I am of the opinion that you can't ever point to a single work of fiction, or any work for that matter, as being an inciting element in driving someone to do something. I think that's pretty nonsensical. Like, no individual piece of work alone could solely make someone do that. That's my perspective on it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
However, just to make a very, like, numerical example, I'm really boiling this down to basics, but let's assume in Columbine's case, the argument that people were posting was that, okay, Doom, like, you know, made them pass that threshold of insanity that made them do that. It was that one product that had such a strong influence, and then let's say the breakpoint was an arbitrary number like 5,000. You can call 5,000 insanity points, 5,000 Looney Tunes, whatever you want to call it. Let's just use that as our baseline here for this point I'm going to make. The perspective I've come to, having watched Ollie's video, is that I think that rather than a single work leading to someone doing that, I think that if the works are that they consume in general, many, many different pieces, all preaching or suggesting or, you know, having the same thing, even if that's only very subtle or minor, like, you know, each individual work is worth 10 points as opposed to the 5,000 I cited previously. If you consume enough of that over time that all gives you the same idea, it won't probably drive you to kill people, but it will certainly, I would argue, influence your perspective or even your language or the way you speak.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so think of it this way, right? Authors, when they write works, they're always writing from their own experiences. And that's not even necessarily to say, like, you know, that they're writing a sci-fi novel and they've been a space marine. That's obvious nonsense. But I'm talking more about, like, you know, it's a melange of, like, their language that they've learned, the words that they've used, the perspective they have towards gender, etc. There's always going to be that blend in it, which is why, you know, whenever you read a book and it says, this is a work of fiction and the views of the characters within do not necessarily represent the author, that unfortunately is not necessarily true, because it will always represent it to a certain amount. There'll always be a certain amount of bleed through from the author's own worldview, even if they don't necessarily intend it.
Do you feel that way with antagonists that authors write? Do you feel that even some kind of small part of them is reflecting the author's maybe just their experiences with, I don't know, fascism or racism or what have you?
I think maybe I need to distinguish here between what is overt design or intentional design versus what comes in that's not unconscious design. Like, there are plenty of works out there, Transformers being one of them, that, you know, unintentional...
That is the most fantastic abrupt lead-in to discussing Transformers. There are many works out there, Transformers being one of them.
Yeah, Transformers being one of them, which, for example, you know, sexualized women that probably didn't even need to or mean to do that. It was just, you know, an unconscious way of filming or crafting the scripts and all the work in question. So I think that, for me, the distinction is more the case of it's not something that you may necessarily be consciously aware of when you're crafting a work, but more rather how unconsciously your experiences and what you've read, consumed, etc. can bleed through even a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that ties back to the point I made before. So why is this relevant to the idea of ethical defects and what Ollie was saying, and in particular with anime fanservice? Here's the thing I've now realised. You can't point to any single particular work and say this, you know, you can point to it and academically say the fan service in this is bad. You know, for a variety of reasons. I mean, how many times have I talked about that on Stream of Thought and various podcasts we've done where I thought, God, this fan service was just shit. Why is it here? Why?
Right.
But the thing is, that's only looking at works individually in their own little bubble, which is a function of reviewing an individual work's apps.
Mm-hmm.
So, given what I've just told you, I would say that ethical defects in a work, particularly with fan service, because it portrays, you know, women in a state of, like, you know, sexual, you know, how would I describe it? Basically, they're in the nuddy. There we go. We'll go with that. They're in the nuddy. You know, nothing left to the imagination, but there's no reason for it to be there other than just to titillate. I would argue that an individual work that does that will not suddenly make you think, oh, I should probably, you know, objectify women. I think that's nonsensical. People's opinions don't necessarily turn on a dime like that. I don't think that's realistic to say. But imagine if you watch a lot of fiction, a lot of anime, or a lot of shows even that do that. Maybe they only do it once or twice in their entire run. Maybe it's, you know, a background element rather than the main thing. And maybe you don't really think about it, you don't really notice it. But then maybe you blend that in with how, you know, other people talk about and view women in general, you know, outside of anime, or what you see in, you know, live action television or advertisements. How many times have you seen women in bikinis, etc., etc., etc.? You get the point. So for me, I think the ethical defects are an issue when it comes to anime fan service. But that's in the broader context of how they can perform like this kind of little mosaic piece thing going, where they will ultimately, if you look at them over time, you might not even realize it's happening, but you will start to think, you know, what's wrong with objectifying women? What's the problem? So many works do it, and I don't even realize I'm thinking this. Mm-hmm. But they all do it. It's just, you know, natural. It's a thing.
So let me make sure I understand your argument. So I'll restate. You are arguing that individual works that contain instances of fan service are not themselves in isolation bad. That those may be, in those instances of fan service may be ethical defects, but they don't affect the, but they don't have relevance when you're like evaluating the goodness or badness of a work.
In a vacuum, yeah.
You're mainly talking about like a balanced media diet.
Mm-hmm.
That you should, that what is bad for a person is consuming a bunch of works of art with the same worldview.
And this worldview doesn't even necessarily be overt. It mm-hmm. could just be small things that happen occasionally, maybe not even once per episode. But then again, the theory I've got here is that it isn't limited to just one work. It's many works of how many ever that someone chooses to consume. And if they're all, you know, portraying the same kind of underlying idea that, oh, you know what, we can just pull a woman in here, you know, who's got her tits hanging out for no reason. It's not any reason that they would do it. Certainly, you know, they're just wearing skimpy clothing because fuck it, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Then I would argue that over time, people might end up thinking, or not even realizing that they think it, that, you know, it's fine to objectify women. Because, you know, I've seen it thousands of times, or hundreds of times even.
So this is sort of a way to give individual works a pass on fan service?
No, because funnily enough, the way to fix this would be to solve it on an individual basis, basically. And I'm also not saying that fan service doesn't have its place or isn't, you know, welcome. There are certainly many shows I've seen that have had plenty of fan service. It's been excellent. Fujiko Mine.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I think sort of posing it as a problem to be solved might be maybe not a fair way to frame it entirely. Because as you say, like, as long as me, the viewer, has a balanced diet, you know, consuming a little bit of cheesecake every now and then shouldn't hurt anything, right? Because I have these other contrasting works of media to tell me, like, oh, this is actually not good. Or women actually have value intrinsically or beyond their bodies or, you know, etc.
Well, it's not just as simple as an all-or-nothing thing. Like, you can still have a balanced diet, but I would argue that then you're only looking at the anime thing, and then what about the wider world? There's a lot of layers to this. There's a lot of layers to this kind of thing, where everything can serve as a puzzle piece. Every person will have their own puzzle that ends up being complete in their mind. It gives them their perspective and their world.
And also, every person, I think, is a puzzle themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, viewers of media are unique. Different ages, sexes, mental capacities, like abilities to judge, critical eye. Like, it's people will come to these things at different points in their lives. So certain works can have smaller or larger influences on them. You know, they may be more or less impressionable. They may be better or worse at sussing out what the messages are and seeing them clearly for what they are. Now, this is why I tend to see it as not as much of a problem in isolated instances. Before we get too far away from this, let me pull back a little bit and restate this question that Ollie asked. These ethical defects of a work, whether or not you, let's say for the sake of argument that fan service is an ethical defect, let's go with that. Do you think that that makes something worse, or another ethical defect, right? Like a endorsement of something else that you don't
believe in or think is morally objectionable, do you think that always makes a work worse, or do you think that it varies?
Well, it's like I said before, though, I think that it's a question of application execution. Some fan service is fine, some is not. And even then, it's considering the work on its own. Like, I can say it's bad for X, Y, and Z reason, but the wider context of why it's bad and why it's a cumulatively bad thing over time, especially when it's pervasive, or what seems like pervasive, I think that's the key for me. So I would argue it is, but you can't consider the ethical defects of work alone. You have to consider them in context of wider consumption of media and, you know, society. And on top of that, I would also argue that it's one of those things that, you know, again, like I say, there's a reason that individual anime should still be called this, because they shouldn't do it, because it's up to each one to, you know, understand its own place in the wider thing, you know, the wider context, the wider world, the way people see it, the way they perceive it. You know, in the end, for me, I think that it's one of those things where I don't think an individual work necessarily can be, you can call it bad, but I wouldn't argue you could call it consequential. That's the key difference. But many works along broadly same lines,
yeah,
with, you know, that same kind of attitude, can be consequential. I'm not talking about, you know, Columbine level stuff, but I'm just talking how you approach and treat people.
Okay. I guess, okay. So, yeah, that is a different, that's very much a different question and an important question. And we can get back to that. I guess I want to think about some more, if that's okay with you, like this question in terms of evaluating media. And I guess when I say make a work worse, right, do ethical defects make a work worse? Not, I want to be clear and say, I don't think the question is asking if a work has an ethical defect, does that make that work a pile of shit? I think it just means, does it lose marks? You know, does it get worse marks? Does it lose points? Would you kind of view the media lesser in the same way you would as if it had characters that didn't pay off, or plot holes, or poor visual design, or something like that?
Yes, and I'll explain why. So, for me, unjustified fan service, I mean, okay, yeah, the digestic argument doesn't really fly, but I can at least get behind it a little bit if there's at least some reason to put it in there. But otherwise,
like, yeah, Kill la Kill has a pretty, as far as diegetic arguments go, I think it has a really, if not a strong one, a really interesting one, right? Because it's this story of clothes as political power. And it's hard to, like, get around it in that sort of case, nudity, right?
For sure. But the way I see it is that oftentimes when it comes to unjustified fan service, it does a couple of things to the work that are always negative. The first off is that if you're having, I mean, let's say we have, like, you know, a man and a woman discussing stuff in anime that's otherwise run-of-the-mill, but for some reason she's wearing, I don't know, one of those scantily clad, like, you know, outfits that you see in certain 90s shows. You've seen them all before. So for no reason she's got that on, and they're discussing run-of-the-mill stuff. And that to me says to me, what we're actually talking about isn't worth talking about because we need to distract you with this. Now, that is a very, very generic example, and I'm only talking about and not describing it, because obviously filming, you know, angles, shots, composition play a lot into that.
Right.
If, you know, it was Fujiko Mine, for example, and she was talking with Lupin, that would be a different thing because it would play into their character roles, it would play into her flair, so you get the idea.
Yes.
So that's the first thing that I would say is a problem. And then there's a consequence from that, which is I do think that in that case that anime thinks very little of its audience when that happens.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah, I agree.
We know who we're writing this for, and they're obviously not going to care about what we're writing about, so let's put this shit in here, like a panty shot for some reason. To which I would then ask, well, why are you even bothering with the story? Why is it there? It speaks to bad writing in general, because it shows a lack of focus. Like, okay, on the one hand, the stuff we have here, we don't care about, so we're going to do this, you know, fan service stuff.
Yeah.
In that case, why isn't all one or the other? Now, I'm not saying that shows can't have both. Lupin, again, Fujiko Mine is one example, or even the other Lupin works, for that matter. But the thing about those shows is that in those cases, the characters were very much aware and in control of their sexuality, which is another big factor. When women are just dressed scantily because why not? That's not a decision that they're making. That's not them dressing because it's anything to do with them. It's the character's hand dressing them. You know, sorry, not character. The creator's hands at work there dressing them up, you know, playing yes. dress up or the lack thereof. So it's denigrates the audience. It makes the work look like it doesn't, you know, matter or isn't taking itself seriously. Which would be fine if that was the tone of the work as well, I should stress. But I've seen more enough shows in this by this point which are meant to be taken dead seriously or where dire shit's happening and then suddenly, you know, there's a full moon on the screen. For no reason other than it is. So basically it boils down to you know, we're bad writers, we're bad, you know, showrunners, because we're putting this in here, we're not even going to give you the token reason of why it's here, but we're basically admitting by putting it there that what we've got, or the existing material, is not worth your time. To which I again would say go one way or go the other.
Just a quick anime production type note. It is hard to, like, apportion blame, I think, in these cases. Or harder than we might think, just because anime production tends to be such a collective process. Deeply collective, you know what I mean? And so, like, I think there might be instances in which these kind of considerations for anime as product, as vehicle for figure sale, image album, that kind of thing, are pushed upon directors, writers, animators, all that sort of stuff. So I don't know. I mean, some of it may be kind of out of their control. Again, it's hard to. I'm not saying that your larger point about the thing itself doesn't stand. Just it is hard, I think, to know, or harder than we think to kind of understand where to, like, point the finger of blame.
Well, the funny thing is I have an answer to that now, because I discussed it just earlier. Because do you remember what I said about authors being a, you know, a patchwork of their experiences through life?
Right.
So where'd they get these ideas from? Where'd they get these notions from to do this sort of thing? From preceding works, probably, more than likely, you know, things they're growing up with. So again, the fault lies, funnily enough, with the show, or just a different show, or many different shows, many different experiences blending together, a wider cultural, you know, standpoint. So, and
it's
when
the culture's fault.
Yeah, and when it's a collaborative process, well, the culture's to blame for everyone's perspective in that case. There's just going to be mild variations on, you know, how people approach it. But they're always going to be going towards the same end goal, which is, as you've rightly pointed out, when they try to enforce a kind of, you know, anime as products, you know, thing. But I would again always ask, why bother putting a story in? I mean, I think it was, funnily enough, we mentioned Doom before, and I'm going to bring this up again. John Carmack, who was one of the original programmers on Doom, like, he said, story in a game is like, you know, story in a porno film. It's not important, it's just there to connect stuff together. But then the story is a big
I very
deal
much disagree with that.
Well, I know, that's a video game thing, but he was talking about stuff at the time. And in Doom's case, I actually agree the story is a hindrance, and if it's there in significant detail, see Doom 3. But anyway, don't see Doom 3.
Doom 2016, though.
Doom 2016 was great. That's the thing, though, it didn't have a lot of story to it.
That's the story time. Was there was so good.
Yeah, but it
it's
didn't
so
also,
cool.
It didn't drown itself in shit either, like, you know, constant crap. I mean, one of the first cutscenes you have is, yeah. But anyway, point being, if you want to do that kind of, like, the pornography thing is quite accurate because it kind of is pornography at times, even not explicitly, but certainly in the titillation element. So why drape a story over in such long, extensive detail if all you're going to really care about is fan service or figures?
Well, you were just... This is... Was it Romero you were quoting?
Yeah. John Romero.
I think this is
it.
Him...
No, Carmack. Sorry, John Carmack.
Oh, sorry, John Carmack. Okay. This is Carmack, like, projecting his own pornographic preferences onto the rest of us. Some people, the story might be very important. The setting, the, you know, the roles in which people play, like the who is dominant, like what's the ages of people, all these things to consumers of pornography might matter a lot in terms of the final satisfaction.
As I mentioned before, though, in terms of anime, if you have fan service that distracts from what's going on because the story is not interesting, they can't coexist.
I think narrative can also be product. People really actually care. Well, I say people, not everyone, but I think, you know, fandoms can crop up around things because of story, because of lore. Like, that can be someone's access point into a thing for which they'll become a fan and buy a bunch of stuff. Like, I think to sort of set story apart as, like, not part of the product and only part of the art.
I think you might have misunderstood. I'm speaking specifically to examples when you have unjustified, you know, distracting, unnecessary fan service in there. That's when it's incompatible with a story, in my opinion, by design or lack thereof, because you have characters being in, you know, being in situations in which they are objectified, and is there a justification for it in story? Is there a justification for it, you know, being there? Does it, you know, expose the character's agency or, you know, understanding of their own sexuality? If the answer to all of those is a big fat fucking no, it is completely divorced from story, in my opinion. It counters the story because it, as I said, is a confession that all this stuff they're talking about doesn't matter.
Hold that thought. I think it's time for Dance Break!
Okay, and so I think actually, so I know something about you that might be relevant here to the audience. So when you say, I think when a lot of people say things like unjustified fan service, like if a stranger said that, you might have a night like form assumptions about what they mean. You might think they mean any sex scene, or or any topless scene, or whatever. But like, you have played and enjoyed the Fruit of Grisaia. And think that there's a fair bit of fan service and hentai in it that is actually justified, right?
You got your trap card out there. Well,
I'm not trying to, and this is not me trying to be an asshole and trap you. I think this is actually really important.
Yeah, so, okay, maybe I should explain what my version of justified is.
Yeah,
In the Fruit of Grisaia, then, to give people an idea, yes, it is a hentai-based visual novel. Here's the thing. If you want to go into Fruit of Grisaia over the hentai, you have to wait a long fucking time for it to happen. So that's a very basic argument, you know, in favor of it, that it's not something that happens immediately. If you're there for titillation, you might as well literally just go on Pixiv or just, you know, turn off Google Safe Search and just hit, I feel it lucky! I'm feeling fucking lucky! Like, you could do that. However,
Grisaia, Safe Search off.
Ooh. Ugh. In the case of Grisaia, though, the sex scenes that happen between the lead character and the various women are extensions of their relationship. They happen, you know, because funnily enough, when you do, you know, become intimate enough with someone, you do end up tending to have sexual encounters. I'm not saying everyone does, not saying that, you know, it's a bad thing, but you get my point. That is a progression point for a lot of people in relationships. And the thing is, the behaviors and the things that happen in the sex scenes aren't just simply after titillation themselves. Like, the characters are inexperienced, they don't know what's going on. One of them, who puts herself out as like kind of like this sexual tyrant, something kind of embarrassing happens to her during it that actually shows her inexperience, and it is merely a bit gross. But the thing is, like, it's not ashamed of saying, like, you know what, like, this is how it would be for people progressing in a relationship like this. There is one character that I fast forwarded through that shit way, way faster. if you play Grisaia, you may know who I'm referring to, but I'm not going to bother wasting time explaining it. So for me, it's again a question of application, execution. Why is it here? What purpose does it serve?
I just wanted to put that out there, like, because I think it is important, like, because people will tune you out if they think that you are, certain people will tune you out if they think that you are, like, just completely biased against You know, if you're automatically considering this one fan, this one, you know, if you're automatically considering something unjustified, no matter what, I don't know. I just thought it was important to illustrate.
Well, the thing is, by merit of saying unjustified, I have to come to a conclusion that makes me think it's unjustified. I can't simply be carte blanche.
Yeah, what's your standard of justification?
Well, if you want my standard of justification as a broad thing, I'd say it has to be cogent or tied in with the narrative or the characters in some way. So in the case of Fujiko Mina, which I brought before, Fujiko, you know, she is a temptress. She's completely in charge of her own sexuality and uses her as, you know, her way of getting her way with men. So that's fine. Like, you know, it's her expressing her sexual power. Funnily enough, written by a woman, so there you go. As opposed to, say, God, I'm trying to think of an example that would make me feel sick.
Elfin Lied? I don't know. I'm just thinking of bad shit.
Well, okay, let me speak about a bad show that had very visible. Let's go back to Franks for a second, because we.
Okay.
I remember that you and I discussed, like, you know, the presence of the girls being in the shower in one episode, and there's no such thing for the boys when they're having a pre-battle banter. And I suggested, of course, well, why is it in the shower? Obvious reason, but they could have done it anywhere. Ergo, what the fuck is the point of this? It's simply for titillation. And it goes against the tone of the coming battle because, like, oh, this should be tense, but no, look at this butt. And here's the thing, though. In the very same episode, Ichigo, you know, everyone's favorite internet punching bag, if you don't know what the fuck you're talking about, she is in the shower, pining her cheeks, and she's butt-ducking naked because the thing is, that's an allegory for being vulnerable. That's an allegory for, you know, feeling like she's not ready, like she's literally naked in more ways than one. So I was okay with it in that instance. So there's your two-point contrast in the very same episode from the very same show as to what I'm okay with versus what I'm not. So, because I also have to say, and I know that you've said to me before that people like to get attached to characters and narrative, and this is what you've said about, like, you know, combining two together, which I admit, you know, there are personality traits in fictional characters I do find appealing. But generally speaking, if you want strict sexual titillation, why are you wasting your fucking time watching an anime show when you can literally go straight for the hardcore stuff? I never will understand the fact that people will simply not shortcut.
Yeah, cut to the chase.
Cut to the chase. I mean, I know that people like certain characters. I mean, that's why one episode exists. I get that. I really do.
I guess in defense of those folks, they might go into a work and fall in love with the characters, but also then find themselves very into them. Like, they might have, I don't know, started Scum's Wish because they were intrigued by the concept and then ended up being sexually attracted to various characters in it, and there are sex scenes in that show, and so they might, you know, go to scenes in that show for satisfaction. So that would, I guess, be a counterexample. Like, they wouldn't
be there just for the TNA. They'd be there for the hearts as well.
The TNA is part of it, but the emotional connection is also part of it.
This is true. This is very true, and that there are certain people in certain ways. And you know what? That's entirely fine. I mean, Lord knows there aren't enough, you know, that there are plenty of fictional characters out there who have appealing personality traits as well as just looking good. And if you like them, I can understand that because, funnily enough, you may very well not know someone like that. You know, characters can be bewitching and fun, I'd argue, even because they are creations of human people. Maybe you might even realize it, but if someone can imagine that person, there's a good chance they might actually exist somewhere out there.
Right.
Possibly. I mean, that's a long shot, but sometimes the fantasy alone can be a comfort.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that. So I agree with what you're coming from here, but the funny thing is, you'll often find in those cases that, you know, the personality is good and that's great, and so is the works in which I deride the most are often where the personality is not good.
Right.
Or non-existent. Yeah. Like,
sure.
That's the thing, like, Fujiko Mine, for example. Like, even if you are a purist who thinks, you know, the fact that Fujiko gets a tits out and shags Zenigata at some point in the show is a bad thing, you can't deny that at least it, you know, blends with her personality and is a function of her character and her agency, and that she is interesting as a character because of her backstory. So even on the opposite side of things, if you're strictly, you know, avert your eyes, oh dear children, don't let my, you know, pupils be stained with this, you know, vile filth, then you can at least appreciate the characters there.
Bodies. Human bodies. Ah!
But more often than not, I am of the opinion that you'll often find when shows like that where the fan service hasn't had much thought into it, usually the characters haven't either, because, funnily enough, the same brain, or lack thereof, is not putting much thought into it. That is a causal. That is not a causal thing, by the way. That's just a correlation or an observation I've made, so don't take it as gospel. And I'm sure people can cite works in which that happens. But I also, you know, I've said this on the Banana Fish stream, I'm starting to lean towards reading or consuming more fiction that's not by cis-het men, simply because I, as a cis-het man, get really fucking pissed off whenever I feel like the show is speaking to my dick rather than my brain, because it's not what I'm here for. If I want pornography, I'll go on the internet for pornography. Simple as that. And sure, there are characters who you say who have, like, you know, both good personalities and look great in the concert. I mean, Senja Gahara, how many times do you have to bring her up? There you go. There's your prime example. So they do exist. But I'm here for a specific reason. The reason is not to have that kind of stuff thrown in my face because they think I'm just, you know, a drooling, you know, perverted, you know, thirsty man, for lack of a better spinning phrase.
What if they just think that you're thirsty today?
Well, excuse me while I go get another bit. No, that's not the wrong answer. Well, they cannot know that any more than I can. They have to have an idea of the person in mind that they're making it for, and generally speaking, in my opinion, if all you think of your audience is that they're horny and you don't think any more of them than that, I do think that's being a bit, you know, mean-spirited towards them. It doesn't treat people as thinking individuals who, you know, are capable of looking at work and not thinking, or just fapping off.
Some people might think I'm absurd for arguing this, and I am just...
I'm up for absurd eyes. Hit me.
Devil's advocate of it. So, like, what if it is actually them thinking more of their audience? Like, for example, you know, you brought up Monogatari. What if, you know, they're thinking among the various needs of our audience, you know, you've got the need for a good story, the need to be entertained with witty banter, the need of intellectual fulfillment, which we have with this imagery. And occasionally they have, you know, these sexual frustrations. They have needs there. So from time to time, we will supply things that satisfy that. Now, as I say that argument out loud, that's just them ignoring other big swaths of their audience that don't actually have those needs and could be alienated by that stuff.
Mm-hmm. In the specific case of Monogatari, as you mentioned there, though, the thing is, often a lot of times those elements weave together. They weren't simply things that happened in vacuums from scene to scene or moment to moment. So there is that. I mean, go back to Grosaia. Like I say, there is the sex scenes in there, and they are incredibly graphic if you're into that stuff.
They're very compartmentalized.
Yeah, but first, you know, they're not there, firstly, in 5 minutes in, because that would betray their purpose, and secondly, they're there because they're a part of a function of, you know, a developing character relationship. So there is that. Mm-hmm. So, and when you say, like, you know, thinking of the needs of your audience, you have to consider that while in the case of Monogatari, they did think of those things, as you say.
I mean, I don't actually know what their intent was. You know what I mean?
I want to adapt this book and just get paid for it. I'll do it well, but just this once.
The author could be just, you know, fulfilling his own fantasy. I mean, there's, you know, a million things. And I'm sitting here arguing about authorial intent when I don't think it matters too much.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is as well, though, is to go back to what you said about, like, thinking of your audience's needs. Sometimes shows will want to be about the fan service, but then they think to themselves, what they don't want, which is a story to get in the way, but they put a big story in anyway. So, you know. Mm. Again, I'm speaking to the fact that when we're giving too much credit to people doing this, they're not thinking about it. It certainly isn't as black and white as fan service bad or fan service good. It's again a question of individual works and the wider context in which they operate, especially when you have a cumulative consumption of them. But I also have the opinion that it's not unfair to say, you know, that sometimes creators simply don't think. They just put it in there because it's what they know. Not because it's justified in being there narratively or any other reason. Just because, you know, it's the thing that you do. Status quo. Why would we not do that?
Do you mind if I give my own answer to this question now?
I've certainly spoken for long enough about it, so go right ahead, my friend.
I've also been arguing with you quite a bit, so teasing out your answer, so that's not your fault.
No, it's a good thing you did. I'm usually prone to being very circumspect.
So, do ethical defects have aesthetic relevance? Do they lower the artistic value of a work? Boy, I have the answer of yes and no.
Basically the same as me then, but just it just depends on when you do it.
On the level that I'm most comfortable talking about this stuff, it's a no. Because I think in many respects, all works of art have ethical defects.
Mm-hmm.
Media just is problematic. Ethically so, in many ways, whether it realizes it or not. It's very instructive. If you hear what I'm saying and you're like, what? That's ridiculous. If you make an examination of media from the 20s or the 50s, mm-hmm. Or earlier, the ethical defects are screaming off the page at you because they came from a culture that was very different than ours. Mm-hmm. We're immersed in our own culture, so it's very hard for us to, I think, see a lot of the ways in which we've gone wrong. I mean, even stuff from the 80s, we can look back and go, wow, whoa, this wouldn't fly today.
Not so fresh anymore.
This is very problematic. This particular characterization or this take, this is ethically dubious. And I think given enough time, almost all media will fall when it comes to that kind of examination will be found wanting. Mm-hmm. So I think even when you can recognize ethical defects, you know, that of media that come out of your own culture, you're like, wow, this seems a little exploitative, or oh boy, this has fascist imagery. I wish they weren't wearing Nazi uniforms. Ugh. You can see that and also find a great deal of enjoyment in the work. So in that sense, that's where I'm inclined to say no, that like people will enjoy and should be able to enjoy what they like, regardless of the problematic aspects, because, you know, then you run into these fallacies or paradoxes, I guess, of like, well, how problematic is too problematic? You know what I mean? Is 43% where we draw the line? If not, how about 44% and so on mm-hmm. and so forth? What does a 44% problematic work look like? I don't really know, but...
Phantom Requiem for the Phantom? No, actually...
no, that's much more.
That's more, yeah, sorry, wrong way around. I'm sure we'll think of something. Attack on Titan? I don't know.
That's true.
That seems more like it.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable. That one also might be higher. But it, regardless.
It's not good.
Then you throw me off. Then you come to like you have works like Banana Fish, where they were trying to be progressive. And at their given time, but on reflection, we can see that despite the good intentions of the creators, there's still, you know, tropes, stereotypes, that kind of thing, and it's not maybe so progressive in light of the advancements we've made. And so you have like works like that I think are enjoyable and also are like valuable in terms of like the history of art.
Mm-hmm.
Again, despite the ethical defects that surface, right? Mm-hmm. That were latent in it. The part of me, so I've talked about like the part of me that wants to answer the question, no, ethical defects don't mar a work of art. But I guess I do have to say on a certain level, it does, I think, harm a work's, I'm going to use a very bad word here, objective value and merit. Because like I alluded to earlier, it's a storytelling issue. It's a problem because I think Ollie, I forget who he attributes this to or cites, but you know, that there are philosophers and critics that think ethical defects are indeed problems for media because they reflect the author's intention to try to sell you on a worldview or point of view, and you mm-hmm. come away thinking that they're defective, like that there's an ethical defect, that no, you did not sell me. You did not accomplish your intended purpose.
Yeah. Or you did something actively negative even, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that it will be like them trying to get you to love a character, but you not loving the character.
Yeah, I mean, not just to derail you there, but also the reason that you called them ethical defects because they can have tangible influences, as I've alluded to, on people's behavior. Not individual works, certainly. I mean, start step out that. But we're not talking like, you know, ethics doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's the study and application of, you know, I'm going to merely flub my meaning here, I do apologize, but it's, you know, of right behavior towards people. How do we treat people equitably? It's not something that you can discuss ever in a vacuum because it's always got application. So if you call something that's got an ethical defect, inevitably it will have a real-world consequence, even if it's only a very tiny, nebulous one. So there you go. The clue's in the name. That's why they are bad. Because this is the thing, like, you know, I would be more forgiving if this was simply something that was purely academic and could, you know, and works only ever existed inside the books they were in and never, ever, ever, ever influenced people's behavior, be it cumulatively or otherwise. Again, more likely to be cumulatively than not. But that's not the case. It's an ethical defect, not an academic one. So by the name alone, I'm of the opinion that absolutely, just not to the point where you can say, well, that work made my son into a, you know, a demon-possessed monster who harassed women. That's not the case. Many, 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 many works might, you know, make him, you know, treat women occasionally a bit, you know, crudely. Might, you know, cause him to, you know, invade space, whatever you want a situation you want to describe for it.
So I might seem a bit hypocritical when I say that ethical defects do harm work, but all work has ethical defects.
Mm-hmm. Not made equal, that's the thing.
Exactly. That is exactly the point I was going to say, that a comparison of two works will yield a difference in the amount and the severity of ethical defect. I think then reasonable people can look and judge, okay, Banana Fish was trying to say something good, and I don't know, Keijo was very much, this is the Keijo, do you remember Keijo?
I do. I didn't
to say something necessarily, may not be necessarily making the effort.
That
to
said,
say
you
something
bringing
progressive.
You bringing up Keijo has made brought up a very good point, which is also the intent of work as a whole. If someone would say to me that Keijo, I mean, was like, you know, primarily about delivering fan service and then kept the story to an absolute minimum based around a competition, I would agree with you. And that's why I actually don't dislike that work at all. Now, okay, maybe that's still a bad thing for me not to dislike it, because obviously, you know, its purpose is there from the ground up to be that kind of objectifying thing. Yes. The fan service in that show is justified because that's entirely its function.
Okay, right. And it is a show designed to titillate.
I mean, I've spoken before about the idea of contracts. Like, you know, when you watch a show, what's its contract being set? What is it telling you it's going to be about? So if I have a show that's telling me it's going to be, dare I say, a post-apocalypse dystopian mecha show, wink wink, when it starts throwing in stuff not related to that, be it fan service or no, but fan service particularly being irksome, that's when I start getting...
Or like, you know, imperatives that a millennial should have more children. Thinly disguised.
Thank you, Shinzo Abe, or whatever. Anyway, so I should probably add there's a caveat that I forgot to add before, that if you think I'm going to complain about shows that are very explicitly like that, I'm not, because that's what they are. They're not trying to mislead me or missell me on their intent. They're not things that I will personally watch or care about, but I won't presume for a second to say that other people won't enjoy them. But, you know, there's a difference between the likes of Keijo and other works which sell me on the premise of something else and then deliver on that entirely separately. It's falsehoods, it's lies. It's like reading, you know, I've said this before, it's like you buy a novel and then it suddenly turns into be a pornography book. Like, you know, you were sold a fantasy book that's written word, next thing you know, there's just tits everywhere. And you know what? Like, if that was then remodeled or repackaged as a pornography book, fine. I'm not going to complain about that product being there. Or rather, being marketed the way it is. I mean, the discussion of whether or not we should be having that kind of material out there is a different matter. Again, question of application, execution, purpose, blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to make a blanket statement for or against it, because that's silly and stupid. You get the point.
Do you think we're sounding, like, condescending? We're coming off as, you can enjoy whatever fucking heinous garbage you want. You know what I mean? Like, I'm slightly dissatisfied with that, if that is how I'm coming across by saying enjoy what you like. I enjoy things that I also think are less artistically meritorious than these other things. But just understand that they are lesser pieces of art. Does that sound a little...
That's not
like
the intent I'm trying to get across at all. No.
And I'm speaking for myself.
Well, let me offer you a bone then here. I think the thing that you're trying to say is that you're welcome to watch whatever you want, but you might want to have some self-awareness about the work. You might want to just accept, you know, be more aware of it beyond a surface level.
Yeah. Yeah, because I... You know, there's some stuff that I would consider sort of pop art, low art. I mean, I guess you could argue all anime is this way, but I don't necessarily agree. But I know there's some stuff, I don't know, let's just use Twitter speak. There's some trash that I like. I like me some trash, okay? I dig it. This is me judging by my own standards, my own media I've viewed. Like, I can see other people going, hey, don't call what I'm, you know, I don't care if you enjoy it too. You're calling it trash. And I don't agree with you classifying it as such. But I guess that's sort of what makes the world go round. If we can kind of civilly say, look, like, this is just my evaluation of it, and you have your evaluation of it, and it's not a personal issue.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not personal slight against anyone in particular. I mean, I've made plenty of broad sweeping statements before about stuff on this show, as it happens. But yeah. I think that it's one of those things where if it were a Facebook relationship status, it's complicated. But I do think that there are certainly problems with it. There's no, you know, it doesn't matter. None of it's relevant. None of it's a problem. None of it's, like, you know, there are problems here and there. But the question is that I think the important thing is that we approach each of them individually and give them their own time and merit and discussion. I mean, I certainly have come up with broad rules here and there. And then I keep coming back to Kill la Kill, which in theory should have been one of the most egregiously, you know, annoying shows ever for me, but it wasn't. I really did enjoy it, as did Ollie from Philosophy Tube. So it's one of those things where I think the thing that you need to do is just to make sure you give everything its own fair shake if it's something you do want to watch. I mean, if it's obviously very openly a thing that you don't want to watch, don't do that. I'm not saying you should waste your time watching everything just to get a rounded opinion. Give everything its fair shake. Don't be reductive, particularly. Consider the context that the show's working with, the message, the characters, you know, what it means for them to be objectified like that, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
Does it have a wider world-building element? Consider the author's optics. Maybe, I mean, whatever they might say their intent is. Again, all works are products of human creation. Inevitably, things will bleed through. Worldviews and perspectives, even very subtly. So, despite claiming otherwise, I mean, Dan Olsen did videos on 50 Shades of Grey in which he said that, you know, the books, despite Erica Mitchell, E.L. James, you know, whatever the fuck her online handle was, protesting otherwise, did have a very consistent message of BDSM bad. Which, well, people obviously took very strong umbrage to that because it's not something I personally am into, by the way. I'm not going to reveal I've got a dungeon back here that you can't see with the leg spreader. But what I will say is that...
That's okay. It's all right. I'll keep your secret.
Yeah. But what I will say is, in that particular instance, Erica Mitchell explicitly stated that that wasn't what she wanted to get across. But the book very clearly, like, even if unintentionally, says otherwise. And that's a function of worldview. That's a function of things bleeding through. It's again what I said before about the idea of this piece is a work of fiction and does not reflect the views of the author. Like, bullshit. It always will, just to varying degrees. The works that ultimately do completely reflect the views of their authors are usually biographical in nature, autobiographical particularly. But there are some that are just very nakedly, you know, morality plays based on, you know, their own perspectives. But what I'm talking about and why I said it was a problem of ethical defects is because over time, cumulatively, consuming works of a similar ilk that have those kind of interpretations that may not be in foreign intent will in turn bleed through into your own mindset and will then, in turn, when you make your own work, similarly bleed through without you realizing it. I mean, to go back to say, you know, Franks, we of course had a lot of discussion about the fact that, you know, Nishikori said there were no political messages in that. Even if, hand on heart, he was telling the truth and he never meant to have any message in it whatsoever, the work speaks very clearly otherwise, and that's a function of his upbringing, his worldviews, and what he has learned over the years from the media he's consumed and the life he's lived. And that's why it will be a problem in ethical defects. Just it will only be one small jigsaw piece in a wider problem. But the thing is, how do you fix individual jigsaw pieces? You repaint them. You redesign them, you redraw them. And you have to do it for all of them in order to solve the problem that wider. By the way, once again, blanket statement, not against every fan service ever. Some shows are incredibly great for their fan service or for the way the characters act. There's a reason that I commissioned Cheryl Gnome to be our album art. You know, I'm proud of commissioning that shit. She is a classy lady.
Oh, yes.
But the thing is, there's more to her than just, you know, the boobs and the butt. There's also the hair. No, wait, of course, I'm joking. But you get my point.
And hey, I mean, you know, and you brought up Senju Gohara earlier, and her sex appeal is a big part of her character, but it is a part. You know what I mean? There's so very much more that makes her interesting and worthwhile to read about or watch. I just wanted to take this opportunity to say Go Nagai must, whether he realizes it or not, must love dinosaurs because they keep showing up in his work and being awesome. I don't know if he understands.
This is a tangent.
His own psyche.
I see, but... so authorial intent again, you know. Even in daft ways like that, it can bleed through just a little bit. But there you go, folks. That's my long final thesis statement on fan service, short of, you know, me becoming a Puritan. Well, or, you know.
I don't, let's not call it final. We've talked about this topic off and on throughout the lifespan
this
of the
is
podcast.
True, yeah.
And we could continue to kind of refine our views. I mean, I've talked about it with you. I did an episode on it with the Blade Licking Thieves a year or so ago. It's been more than a year, I think, at this point. And my views continue to evolve. So let's keep trying to better understand each other and artwork. And
yeah, I mean, I suppose, like, you know, if I could have a moment, like, say, where I thought my views were set and then I kind of widened them in response to something that was related but not ultimately, you know, directly addressed to me or something that I personally experienced, that video specifically, then maybe I should be open to the possibility of that happening again in the future. You know, it happened once, it can happen again.
Indeed. I think we've come to the end of our discussion, and it's been a very fruitful one. Thank you, Shadon.
My pleasure. Thank you, Insane Doc.
So, where can the good people find you on the internet?
You guys can find me on Twitter at ShaneTenTen. Please feel free to smash that like button before it disappears entirely. You may also find me on CuriousCat.me /ShaneTenTen. So feel free to hit me up to tell me that I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, at which point I will smash that mute button because I don't care. No, I'm kidding. I'm always happy to engage discussions made in good faith, so do feel free to come my way if you do have good faith discussions in mind. If you have bad faith discussions in mind, kindly piss off.
I can be located on Twitter at The Subtle Doctor, and I also, and Shadon does too, manage the Wari Desho accounts. If you'd like to get in touch with the podcast as a whole, which is me, Shadon, and Vargalia, tweet us at Wario Desho, email Wario Desho, WARUIDESHOU at gmail.com. We got a SoundCloud page if you're finding this on iTunes. If you're on SoundCloud, hey, we're on iTunes too, Apple Pods. We have a YouTube channel as well, which we do plenty of live stream discussions about anime and stream games from time to time. This will be going up there in some form or other. Check us out there if you are elsewhere. Please like, subscribe, share, follow, etc.
Smash that like button! How many times do I have to tell you?
Continually smash. Well, folks, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us for this special occasion, this kind of interesting one-off, and maybe we'll do more of these in the future.
Indeed.
If you all like these topical episodes. But for Shadon, I am the Subtle Doctor. Embrace each other, everyone, to the ends of the universe.
Good night.